days, we never had any colder. That kind of hardened your mind about how many whales you're supposed to get, how many strikes determine, you know. And that was no pressure. Today, that applies because of the colder. And we're trying to abide by it, and it's not easy. It's pressuring the poor whaler's mind right now.
Sadie Neacock's husband, Nate, is the whaling captain in Barrow, one of nine villages that traditionally hunt the bowhead whale. He and the other whaling captains in those villages must abide by a quota system established by the International Whaling Commission in Brighton, England. The IWC sets the number of whales that may be hunted. In this Chinook program, we'll examine the quota system and other developments that have politicized Eskimo subsistence whaling.
Going back into the history and regulation of the bowhead whale hunt since 1977, the federal government was, for the first time, was imposing regulations that were that involved an international organization. They had, before 1977, used the domestic laws to regulate, which basically exempts the Eskimos from regulations under the Marine Mammal Protection Act and the Endangered Species Act, and pretty much left the Eskimos alone until the international body decided that they should stop whaling. The Eskimo community did attempt to cooperate with the International Whaling Commission and the United States, and it came to a point where the Eskimos realized that both the international body and the federal government didn't know very much about their culture and what it meant to them.
Eskimo whalers made attempts to reach an agreement with the United States and the International Whaling Commission. The 1977 moratorium prompted the formation of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission as a body that would speak for whaling captains from the nine whaling villages. In 1980, some crews in Barrow refused to cooperate with externally imposed strike limits and stayed out on the ice after the quota was reached. Finally, the U.S. government and the IWC agreed to permit the Alaska whaling captains to regulate themselves. Now the Eskimo Whaling Commission is involved in negotiations on the harvest of the bowhead whale. Marie Adams.
We negotiate the quota each year before March 15th, and this has gone on since March of 1981, when the agreement was signed. The agreement took care of some of those issues that we faced in 1977, that there are still unresolved issues concerning this, the status of the bowhead whale stock.
Well, the bowhead whale, as you know, is an endangered species. The Eskimo were informed in 1976 that there was probably only 600 bowhead whales left in the world. The hunters knew that that was not true and have gone on to prove that there are more than 600 whales in the world. In fact, last year, 3,857 were counted.
Ray Dronenberg directs the whale counting station in Barrow.
Beginning in 1976, the National Marine Fisheries Service, of course, began coming up here to count bowhead whales. The Eskimo were, kind of put off in that they weren't included in this. In other words, there were people coming up here from Chicago and Seattle and people that had never seen an ice perch or didn't know what a lead was, had never seen a bowhead whale. And they felt that they could do better, and that if the technology came from this village rather than from Washington, D.C., that it would be shown that there were more whales than what somebody in an ivory tower back in Washington, D.C. seemed to think there were. And it came to pass. So that's where it started. Here we are in 1983, working on a number of 3,857 versus the number 600 in 1976, so obviously we succeeded.
But it's a limited success, for the higher count hasn't led to greater cooperation from the regulatory agencies.
I was chastised one time at the International Whaling Commission level by a noted Friends of the Earth person who claimed that I was biased and that I was going to try and prove that there were more whales than what these folks had said, and because I really felt that there were. And so she chided me, saying that you should, you know, with that positive approach, you're obviously going to see more whales. I didn't understand her, you know, but obviously that's always been our goal. We felt that the whalers were indeed telling the truth. There were more whales out there. And so we sought a way of doing that, first of all, by obtaining the funding from the state, second of all, by developing a highly scientific atmosphere, inviting the federal government to participate in this, which we didn't have to do, but ensuring their participation so that they could say that under peer review, this program has indeed been a scientific endeavor with this result, whatever those results were. We could have cut our own throat, you know, this thing could have turned out really badly for us. We were going to prove that what we've done for the last couple of years is indeed correct, that the bowhead whale is on the upswing. It's not declining as predicted by the National Marine Fisheries Service a couple of years ago. And, you know, it's indeed okay for the subsistence harvest to go on.
By finding that there's an increase in the population, do you think you might also be aiding and abetting the cause of commercial whaling?
No. The bowhead whale was decimated to the point of near extinction. 1918, I think there was probably only somewhere around 1,000 bowhead whales left in the world. Yankee whalers had killed off the other 17,000 that were estimated to be in the herd from the late 1800s. So that, you know, we've grown now to say if we agree that there's around 4,000 animals out there, that's not much of an increase. That's pretty slow. It's taken him a while to come back. I doubt that it'll, maybe 20 years from now, he'll be to the point where we can take him off the endangered list. Our concerns are more that oil and gas development could wipe out any one of these things in one day with a spill, where, you know, even if the herd were, as the National Marine Fisheries tried to say in 1976, endangered to that point, it would still take the Eskimo 100 years to wipe him out, you know. Oil and gas development could do it in one day, you know, just by a severe blowout, the herd passing through during, you know, something that happens from an oil well or a gas well. Bad news.
Have the oil companies been responsive to this?
Well, sure, they don't like us to even talk about it. When we talk about noise in the water, you know, as being a possible danger to the whale, we don't get too many people to listen. Airplanes fly over bowhead whales, and they look at the behavior of that animal, but they really don't know what they're looking at. I mean, you haven't had a single bowhead whale tell them that this sound is obnoxious to them. So you don't know what impacts a bowhead whale. You don't, you know, if they jump out of the water holding their ears, that's an obvious sign that they don't like that sound. But what else is an obvious sign? We don't know. Is turning and swimming away, is that an obvious sign? I don't know. And what if they're in a feeding mode? What if, you know, they're a creature that looks for their prey? So now they've looked and looked and looked. It's taken them 10 days, and they finally found this group of whatever they're going to feed on, and they start feeding on it, and now you start banging away with something that's, you know, a hydrophone that's just trying to find out what the substrata is looking for oil. Is the bowhead whale, is he going to be more tolerant for that sound because it's taken him so long to find his food, so he stays in the area, you know? And then he swims away a couple hours later, and you've observed him during this whole time and said, yeah, it didn't bother him at all, you know? And he swims away, and now the blood starts rolling, you know, out of his eardrums, where he's had to be subjected to this thing. The problem is, we just don't know, you know, and I'm not going to say that, you know, that maybe somewhere down the line they're going to prove that bowhead whales like the sound of seismic boats. Maybe they do. Maybe they dance to it. I don't know. But the problem is that we just don't know. And until we do know, then I think we owe it to the bowhead whale, who is, quote unquote, an endangered species, to take every precaution to ensure that he's safeguarded.
But safeguarding the whale may conflict with other needs on the North Slope, for the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation is itself involved in oil and gas development, and many of the ASRC corporate officers are whalers who may find themselves advocating positions that potentially threaten their people. Whaling Captain James Naria.
There's a conflict in these people that are responsible for the corporation, which is a profit corporation, and How can you make a profit if you don't go out on offshore? Because of the whaling, they were saying, no way you're going to get out on the ice. Yeah. There's always a possibility of a blowout. And if there's a blowout in the high Arctic, you know, what's going to happen to it? What's going to happen to our whales? The plankton that the whale feeds. The whole ecosystem is going to be affected. So, what do you do? You know, whaling creates conflict. No slow ball. No. Even within the community.
Community conflict was intense in 1982, the first time in 30 years that no bowheads were landed in Barrow during the spring whaling season. There were 5 strikes and no whales.
There was a lot of hard feelings.
Sadie Neacock.
And then, well, when the last strike went through, the poor whalers had to come in, you know, wasn't the very happy thing. No whale, and then somebody got bold enough and said, well, here we are. We followed up our whaling season. Next year, let's do better with one thought, you know. Because we're all divided. And that's what caused our losses. And one old man said, well, it goes with tradition. That the whale has ears.
This past year, people have been very sensitive, and I think they've taken a close look at themselves.
Murray Adams.
People were not happy. something is missing from their life. There's always been a celebration. There's Smuktek, and it's not just, you know, it means something to them. And to have that missing isn't, it takes away part of the joy from life up here.
So we're in 1983 in a community with modern buildings, stores, and still whaling is the center.
A major priority, I think, and if you ask any of the leaders here in town, they know that it means a lot to the community. And I think the structures around here are misleading. There are a lot of whaling captains who don't have very high incomes, and they still very much depend on subsistence. That has been the argument that we've made, presented to the IWC and to the U.S. government, that the regulations that are existing under the International Whaling Commission only apply to commercial whaling. There's no management plan or schedule that is under the IWC for subsistence take of whales.
In July 1982, the International Whaling Commission voted to ban all commercial whaling, effective in 1986. Opposing the ban were Peru, Brazil, the USSR, Norway, South Korea, Iceland, and Japan. The following day, an effort to stop all subsistence whaling failed. In the spring 1983 boathead hunt, the villages of Wales, Point Lay, Savunga, and Gamble each landed one whale. Wainwright and Barrow got 2 each. 8 whales landed out of 16 strikes, a successful season and a time for celebration and community well-being. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.